Billy Joe O'Leary, 17th of March.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be with you tonight. It's also a wonderful viewpoint on all of you from up here. In my church, we speak at the same level, so I can't see the people at the back occasionally when I'm ever allowed to be given a microphone. So it's a real pleasure to actually be able to see all of you. My name is James, and just to say a little bit about who it is who is speaking in front of you this morning, I live over in Sutton. If you know where that is, it's not quite as nice as this part of the world, but it's about the same level of London. I am married to a wonderful lady called Pat. We have two birth children, and we have also been fostering for the past 6 years, and it's my real joy to come to you this morning and talk about what is a sort of deep passion in my heart, and I know deep passion also in Billy Joe's heart, but telling you a little bit about Home for Good and really the reason behind why we exist. So we looked at Psalm 68, and the verse, I love the psalm in as much as it seems to be such a contrast between basically God going crazy against anybody who is going to stand against his people, and then such tenderness. And this is the verse that really stands out. It says, "A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing." When I was 8 years old, my parents, they separated. And it was a pretty difficult time, I guess, in my life, but especially for my mother. And my world went from being this sort of happy little middle-class bubble in Worcestershire to being suddenly quite awkward, and my dad not being where I thought he was supposed to be. And I didn't really get what divorce meant at the time, or separation meant at the time. I was just a kid. I thought I could explain to my dad that he'd run off with a lady who was half French, and Napoleon Bonaparte, he was French, and he was a bad guy. History shows that. So therefore, obviously, you should come back home. And this was the sort of logic level that I was inhabiting at the time. But my mum said that everything changed. She no longer got invited to dinner parties, and she kind of lived in this shadow of the separation and infidelity that had happened. And she felt that she was made to be like the odd one out. I think the reason why is because she made people feel uncomfortable because of what she had been through. She made them feel awkward. And people were worried that if she came, she might wreck the party. We became people who were kind of a little bit to be pitied. But there was one family who didn't do that. This lovely Roman Catholic family who I went to school with, their children. And so they stepped in and they invited us to be with them at every key time during the year. We'd get invited at Easter, we'd get invited at Christmas, we got invited at birthdays, and they did this for years. So in so many of their precious family moments, we were there, mum and me. And at Christmas, I'd even get presents from them as if I was part of the family, which kind of boggled me a little bit, that we were just there and received all this stuff. And we suddenly gained these sort of uncle and aunts who, I don't know their names, but I knew who they were, and I knew that they were important to me to some degree, because every key time of the year, they were there celebrating us. It was incredible to be part of this family because they made space for us, because we needed it. And in many regards, we were lonely and they were a family who placed us into that. We were living recipients of this verse. Even if it was just in a small way, they weren't scared of the awkwardness that we brought with us or the pain that maybe we had or the sadness we felt on those key days. They really welcomed us in. And it was amazing because the alternative to that is pernicious, loneliness. Is really pernicious. I'm sure that some of you have experienced profound loneliness at some point in your life. I hope you're not at the moment. But if you are, you'll know that it really gets to the core of who you are. It's very different from being alone. It eats away at your value. It says to you that you're worthless, that no one cares. But this verse is saying the antidote to that is family. I was maybe a bit provocative saying choose your family at the start. They say whoever they are, no one knows who they are, but they say you can't choose your family, but you can choose your friends. And I'm sure some of you have said that at some point in the past too. But actually, what this verse is saying is that, well, no, God can choose your family. And actually, implied in that is that you can also choose who will be family with you. Another thing about that family that also stood out to me is that they fostered. I don't know how long this was for. It might have only been for a very short period of time, maybe for a few months, but it stuck out to me. And I remember standing in their garden one day as an eight-year-old boy thinking, opening your home and letting someone come and stay with you who needed that home, needed your home to be their home, well, isn't that what Jesus would want me to do? And so we got in the car and we went home. I remember asking on the route back home, going, could we foster? And maybe I didn't quite get to the time that when you're going through a separation, that's not the time to ask that. I hadn't quite grasped on that. I remember Napoleon Bonaparte. But I think what had happened is God planted a seed in me then. And it took a number of years before it came to fruition. But let's look back at this verse again. I just wanted to see who's involved here. There are orphans involved here, the fatherless. There are widows, there are families, there are prisoners, and there's God. So the fatherless, or the orphans, are those without someone to advocate for them. They need someone to be their voice in society, but they don't have anybody. They need someone to give them definition, but they didn't have that person. In a culture, Jewish culture, where often your name would be defined by who your father was, I would have been James Ben John, because I was James, son of John. That's quite difficult, being fatherless. Takes you out of the norm. There's something that's obviously different about you. Equally, widows were people who did not have a voice in that society. No one was going to speak for them. You remember the parable of the persistent widow. It's almost that she's ignored because she's the one who's speaking. And it's the persistence in the end that gets over. She should have been listened to the first time, surely. Don't we look at that thinking, she's got a voice and she is valuable. But in a society where there wasn't someone to contest for you, maybe you were ignored. The families in this bit, they're the people of God. And the prisoners is a reminder that all of Israel was in Egypt. They had all been prisoners, that God had brought them out. This is a reminder that actually everybody, they're all one family. The fatherless, the widows, the families, they've all been prisoners because they've all been brought out of Egypt. And then there's God. And what is God like? He's described as a fatherless to the fathers. He's described as one who steps into that gap where there is that need and starts fulfilling it. He lends his name to the child so that they have a name, that you could suddenly become James, son of God. He's a defender of widows. He will speak up for the vulnerable and the marginalised. And he sets those groups into families, places where they're given an identity and belonging. And why does he do all these things? Well, the implication also in this verse is that he does it because he is holy. He is both a father to the fathers and a defender of widows in his holiness, in his holy dwelling. They, those who seem to be so ignored and marginalised by society, they are accepted into the holy place. They pass the test. He says that these things are pure, being a defender of widows, being a father to the fatherless. See, holiness is not just about caring for your nearest and dearest and doing that really well. Holiness is about caring for the least and the furthest away. God cares about them and brings them in. In his house, it says these groups are important. They have a stature that whilst the world will ignore the vulnerable and the voiceless, in God's house, they are honoured. They've got significance. And here we are today in another of God's houses. Is it true that those who are vulnerable are given a place of honour in this house? And maybe this is just an Old Testament thing, but there are massive parallels with the New Testament too. James 1 says this. Religion that God our Father finds pure and acceptable is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress. You can see living out this verse is really, really simple. It really takes a lot. There's a real echo between the two. And so not much has changed in where the church is today. And what God was calling to do, the message and the call on our lives hasn't changed. I want to read a little section from Krish Kandai, who is founder of Home for Good's book. It's called God is Stranger. And here he just recounts a story that I feel will help us a little bit. It says this, Saturday morning, strike one. My alarm clock went off too early, dragging me away from my bed and my family. Strike two, I'd speak at a Christian men's breakfast. For me, there is something profoundly uncomfortable about an event that women are only allowed to come to if they are doing the cooking there and not eating, seen but not heard. Strike three, when I got there, the room turned out to be filled with predominantly retired men. Unlikely candidates for my talk, aimed at recruiting adoptive dads for children in care. It was one of these mornings where I wondered how on earth I got to be where I am. This breakfast event seemed to be the least useful or enjoyable use of either my time or God's. My mood for resentment probably showed, to be frank. I dismissed the room as a lost cause. But as we've been discovering through this book, sometimes God turns up in unexpected places and through unexpected people. This was one of those days. I sat down to tuck into breakfast, and an elderly gentleman sat next to me, full of enthusiasm for the work of my charity. As the conversation developed, I began to see why he cared so much. Age 7, John had found himself on a train full of children. Just as the train was about to pull away from the platform, his mother handed him a watch through the open window and then stepped back and waved goodbye. They would never see each other again. John's parents were among the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust, shortly after he was evacuated on the Kinder Transport Programme. They were among the 6 million people living in the wrong place at the wrong time, caught on the wrong side of Hitler's fanaticism. 76 years later, John was able to tell me of his tremendous gratitude for the love and commitment of the family that not only sheltered him, but adopted him as their own after it became clear that he no longer had a home to return to. I went home from that breakfast, humbled and honoured to hear John's story of faith in the midst of such terrible tragedy. As I read his book later that day, I discovered that years after his evacuation, he and his brother, Arthur, received a moving letter from his parents written before they had died. "Dear boys, when you receive this letter, the war will be over because our friendly messenger won't be able to send it any earlier. We want to say farewell to you who were our dearest possessions in the world, and only for a short time were we able to keep you. We go bravely into the unknown with the hope that we shall see you again when God wills. Don't forget us and be good. And two, I too thank all the good people who have accepted you so nobly." It's powerful, isn't it? It's also deeply sad. But it's also, at the same time, hopeful. Now, of course, when we think of a time like that, when we think of the Second World, when we think of the Holocaust, when we think of the Kinder Transport, well, we can think that's just a time that extraordinary things happened. Because it was an extraordinary time, where the need was so obvious that, of course, people stepped up. I know I can think that, and just think that's just a time in history. We make these events the exception. And whilst they are exceptional, the stories at the centre there are also mirrored here in our community, probably even in Hayes. We don't have orphans nowadays, do we? Not least in the UK. No, we don't have an enemy as obvious as Hitler. There isn't a war running like the Second World War. Or maybe if we look at it slightly differently, we can see actually our own society is not that different. I told a little story at the start of what happened to me, and probably that's not uncommon. There are probably many families that you know about where they're suffering from separation or absent parents, and children feeling lonely in that. There are loads of lonely people all around us. Some of them even look like us. But my mum and I needed support from our church, and we didn't actually get that from our church. It took that other family to step in to do that. But there are many children within our communities whose loneliness is far, far more profound. Last year, the number of children who came into care rose by 6% across the UK. 104,000 children spent some time in the care system last year. And the vast majority of those came in because of neglect or abuse they faced at home. See, orphans in the Bible are those who need someone to be their voice, someone to stand up for them, children who need to be looked after. We still have those today. We still have children who need somebody to step in because their parents are not going to be able to do it, whether that's because someone else has taken their parents away wrongly, as maybe we think of the events in Christchurch. How many children might have lost parents and will need someone to step in New Zealand for them? Or whether that's because the parents aren't going to be able to care for them because no one taught them how to parent properly. These numbers are really sad reading. There are over 2,500 children in need of adoption across the UK. And almost 40,000 children are expected to come into care at some point in the next year. And just if we think about the Diocese of Rochester alone, there's close on 3,000 children in the local authorities that the diocese sits in who are in care. The stakes now are still really high. 40% of children who are care experienced aged 16 to 24 are not in employment, education or training. 50% of the youth justice system are care experienced. A third of homeless have spent times in care in their childhood. A third of sex workers spent time in care. One in three care leavers will abuse drugs in the year after they age out of care. And this gets me, actually. Care leavers aged between the ages of 18 and 21 are 9 times more likely to die than the rest of the population. Why is this? Well, there are probably some really complex reasons, but I think at the root of this, it comes from a lack of belonging, a lack of having family where you are known and where you are loved. And if we go back to our calling is to look after the widow and orphan. It says it there, it says it in James, to care for the voiceless, to be able to be with the person who contests for them. And on our second reading in Galatians 4, it actually is echoing the same thing. It's what God has done for us. In the passage, adoption is the pinnacle. The adoption is the pinnacle of the gospel. This is why Jesus died on the cross, so that we would be saved, to be able to receive adoption into his family. It parallels with Psalm 68. Both passages remind us that a holy and powerful God redeems his children from slavery. One was in Egypt, one was talking about the slavery of the law, so that they can be freed and be brought into family. And so what is true is this is our story. When I can stand in front of you today as somebody you've never seen before in your life necessarily, but I am your brother because of who our father is. We are one family. And when anybody comes into our community who comes to be able to say, I know who my father is, well, we are built into being one family. See, we've been chosen by God. And we've also been chosen to be his representatives, to be his image bearers, whether we like it or not. It kind of comes with the territory of him calling us. So caring for someone else and meeting their needs is a choice. It's a choice that God made on our behalf. But it's also in our choice whether we want to do that or not ourselves. But when we do it, and who we do it for, also then reinforces that person is chosen. At Home for Good, we exist to find a home for every child who needs one. And we do that especially through the lenses of fostering and adoption, but we know there are many people who will step up to care for family members because there is that need in front of them. We do this because we know that the heart of the gospel is one of hospitality. It is one of the welcoming God who says, you have a need, I will meet your need, let me do so. We know also because it's our calling to be Jesus to whomever we find in front of us. We are people who are supposed to be his hands and feet, meeting his needs, the needs that are shown around. God's always calling us to be a people who reflect his heart, to be families where the lonely can find home. And it's something we can all do. We know that fostering adoption is not a calling for everybody. It doesn't need to be. When we started as an organisation, we thought if one family in every church that we've connected with were to foster adopt, that would reduce entirely the need across the UK for either adoptive parents or the foster carers so children could be matched well. But it does take a whole church. And I know that within this church there are some who care through special guardianships or family members who have also fostered. So it's not something that is alien to you. But it is something that we're all called to think, well, what is our response to make sure that our church and our place is a place that feels of welcome and of love and of care? That might mean upholding the person who's doing it and saying, I can see you need a break. I will be DBS checked so that you can have that break. And I will enforce you to have that break, because if you don't have that break, you might break. I've said break a lot there, didn't I? Sorry about that, if you were following through that. Maybe everybody can cook. We can all take meals around to people. But actually the heart of where Home for Good exists in caring for the most vulnerable is also something that we all know when we sit in our pews and know there is somebody sitting very close to us who also is going to be feeling lonely and vulnerable. Just as me as a little child felt lonely and vulnerable and a family took pity on my mum and me, actually that has led to whatever else happened afterwards. That set the wheels in motion that allowed God to speak something into my life. You know what, it might be uncomfortable if we start doing this more often, because we'll encounter pain and we'll encounter loneliness and other people's trauma, and that will start to have an impact on our life. It will feel hard, but that's what family, and that's particularly what the church has been designed to do. So 2020, 20 years after I first got invited to Easter or Christmas or whatever it was, we were still being invited to lunch. And then one Sunday lunch in 2009, they called me and said, would you come over again? And so I came over and said, leave your mum at home. And so I arrived and they sat me down and said, James, I think we're concerned about your mum. She didn't seem right, did she? And so I knew she wasn't right. Didn't really know what was going to happen. But they sat with me and we talked about how mum was getting progressively more and more unwell and what I might need to do. They weren't scared about talking to a boy. I wasn't a boy, I was a young man. But to some degree, they'd always seen me as that boy. They weren't scared of talking to me about what might be coming in the rest of that year. The tension and the pain that caused. My mum died 9 months later, and I felt like I was faced with this choice again. I didn't expect to be out on my own in my mid-20s, but I used to see signs about fostering and felt their significance. So on the night my wife and I got engaged, we started having a conversation, what do we want our family to look like? And we both discovered we both wanted to foster. Both of us had grown up without fathers around in our everyday life, and our family life had been far from perfect, but we come to know God as Father in our teens. And we'd experienced being adopted into his family, the church. So a year after we were married, we were approved as foster carers. And 6 years later or so, I know we're celebrating today also 6 years of someone that is one wonderful family. But it's good to think I've got 10 times more to get there. Great. But well, 6 years in, we've been fostering. And it's been hard. It's been sad. It's been really happy. It's been downright weird. But we recently transitioned one child who'd been with us for a few years off to a new family. And when we came to do the goodbye party, we had friends from church over. And what was extraordinary, I felt, was just seeing that she had such an impact on the rest of the church. And there was a little part of me that was worried, where was she going to go? Was she going to have that again? Where somebody so little could have such a footprint on the lives of other people? Where was she going to go anywhere where she would be cared for as much as she was by so many people? Because our church is a family, and you are a family, and we are a family. And when somebody moves on from a family, that is felt. But the amazing thing is, all of that input was not lost at all. She had, the years she was with us, had all these people who were saying to her, gosh, you're really valuable. Everything that's happened in your life beforehand, you're not defined by that. You're great. Not just us as a foster carers, because, hey, that's what we're supposed to do. But all these other people who did not have to do that. And I just saw the power of the church rolling there thinking, this is brilliant. This needs to be happening more and more. Even if there's sadness when someone moves on, that we get to be part of their story. And while she has moved on, she is no longer really fully part of that church family, but she is part of our family and she will remain so going forward. I don't know today if any of this has landed at all and felt. I want to find out more. But we've been working with the Diocese of Rochester and also Diagrama Foundation, who are fostering an adoption agency based in Chatham. If there's anything you feel like something stirring, whether you feel it's a seed or whether you something for the future, whether it's something like I can't do that myself, but I would like to work out what my role could be, Billy Joe and I will be at the back and we would love to talk to you about that. But for now, shall we pray? Father, I thank you that at the heart of the gospel is that we're adopted. That we get to come to you and say, Our Father, because what you have done for us, that you have chosen us and that you love us and that you want to hear from us. You did not have to do any of those things, but yet you have. Father, I pray that the reality of your adoption of us would speak volumes into our lives and into our hearts, just instilling confidence that, hey, if the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, loves me enough to bring into his family, that is good news. And I pray, Jesus, too, that you would enable us to be more your hands and your feet, where you would open our eyes to see loneliness where it exists, and you would enable us to become family for those who need it. Where others need a place of belonging, you would equip us, both as a church and as individuals, to be the people who can meet that need. I pray this in your name. Amen.